Tonight, desperation at the border. President Trump doubling down on his call for migrants to be deported without a day in court.
We want a system where when people come in illegally, they have to go out.
Plus, our emotional interview with a migrant mother, one of so many searching to find the child taken from her. Refused service. The president attacks a restaurant that kicked out his press secretary and targets a Democrat who called on the public to harass Trump officials. Murder mystery. A father shot and killed while camping with his two daughters in a popular state park. The shooter and the motive unknown. Stocks take a plunge, and an American icon, Harley Davidson, moving jobs out of the U.S., blaming spiraling costs on the escalating trade war. A plane goes down in flames. The lone survivor walks away.
They kept saying it was going to explode, but I couldn't leave. I couldn't leave that guy to burn up.
How witnesses helped save him. And the new trend when it comes to hospital-style care, there may be no place like home.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening from Los Angeles tonight, and welcome to our viewers here in the West. Amid the blowback and confusion over family separations and the government's changing zero-tolerance policy toward illegal immigration, President Trump may be about to once again rewrite the policy, this time turning illegal border crossers right around and sending them home without giving them their day in court. An idea almost sure to face a constitutional challenge, as some critics of the president's policy begin to make their opposition personal. Our Peter Alexander has the story.
President Trump tonight declaring what he says is the only real answer to stop illegal immigration in its tracks.
We want a system where when people come in illegally, they have to go out. And a nice, simple system that works.
The president touting a more hardline approach that would strip undocumented immigrants of due process rights, like a hearing before a judge, an argument that advocates for immigrants say is unconstitutional. Mr. Trump, alongside Jordan's King Abdullah, taking credit for last week's executive order overturning his widely rejected family separation policy.
It was something that I felt we had to do. We want children staying together.
But earlier on Twitter, the president making no exceptions for minors who enter illegally, children who he says should be brought back to their country. Today, Customs and Border Protection announced a temporary pause in prosecutions of adults arriving here with children.
We're not changing the policy. We're simply out of resources.
The political firestorm now sparking public shaming of administration officials. Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders today addressing being asked to leave this Virginia restaurant by the owner over moral issues.
We are allowed to disagree, but we should be able to do so freely and without fear of harm.
The president ripping the restaurant as filthy and dirty and warning Democratic Congresswoman Maxine Waters, who he called a, quote, extraordinarily low IQ person, be careful what you wish for, after the California Democrat called for confronting Trump officials.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them.
Waters later facing pushback from party leaders.
Shame! Shame!
DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen was also heckled at a Mexican restaurant. White House staffer Stephen Miller shouted out as a fascist. And Trump ally Pam Bondi run out of a movie premiere in Tampa.
Peter Alexander joining us now for a Republican rally in South Carolina. Peter, what are party loyalists saying about the president's policy right now and how all this is going over?
Yeah, Lester, what's clear is that the president is increasingly emboldened. I think you could say he's been bolstered by recent poll numbers that show 90% of Republicans, including those members of his base here at this rally in South Carolina, approve of the job he's doing. From the conversations we've had on the ground here, they say the stronger the attacks against him, the tougher and stronger their support for him. Lester?
Peter Alexander in South Carolina, thank you. And these are now desperate days for the families who were separated before President Trump's order reversing that policy. For most, the process of reuniting has become a grueling exercise in frustration. At the same time, we're learning more about what it's like inside some of the facilities holding the children. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez reports from Texas once again tonight.
Tonight, a first look inside a tent city near El Paso, Texas, along the U.S.-Mexico border, housing hundreds of migrant children. Journalists were given a tour, but no cameras were allowed inside. The Department of Health and Human Services provided this video. It shows children being examined at the on-site medical clinic and lined up in the cafeteria. The contractor running the tent city said the process is flawed and that its facility would not have been necessary without the separations, which it says harm the children.
We're aggressively looking for parents, and if they're having a hard time, we're going to find them.
After President Trump's executive order last week stopping family separation but keeping his zero tolerance policy of prosecuting undocumented immigrants, migrant families are struggling to be reunited.
The floor is now open.
Five of them spoke out today for the first time as they apply for asylum without their children.
Nunca me imaginé que me iban a quitar a mi hijo.
Among them is Iris Yolani Mancia. We've been following her case since she told us she was separated from her son on his sixth birthday.
What was the hardest part?
She says the hardest moment was when she was told her son would be taken away, and he cried. 2,000 miles away, in a rural, poverty-stricken village in Honduras, her mother Maria wants to know when she'll see her grandson again. They're trapping children there as if they were little animals, and they're human beings, she says. Late today, we were there as Iris was able to reach her mother by phone for the first time since being released from detention. Her mother had good news. She spoke to her young grandson, Ederson, by phone. He's in a shelter in Arizona. They can only hope a reunion is in the making. The children here at this tent city, ages 13 to 17, are allowed limited time outside in the desert heat, but are brought inside once the temperature reaches 98 degrees. The Pentagon confirms that Fort Bliss and Goodfellow Air Force Base will also help house migrants in temporary shelters. Lester.
All right, Gabe Gutierrez, thank you. Turning now to the rough day on Wall Street, the Dow plunging more than 320 points over more trade war fears. And it comes the same day that iconic American motorcycle maker Harley-Davidson announced it is moving some jobs out of the U.S. to avoid spiraling costs after Europe retaliated for President Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum. NBC's Tom Costello has the story.
It's been a fixture on America's roads since 1903, but today Harley-Davidson said it will move a piece of its Americana and the jobs that come with it overseas to avoid a retaliatory counterpunch from Europe after the U.S. imposed tariffs on steel and aluminum.
Harley-Davidson is an American icon, and Americans don't want an American icon that's built in overseas.
Harley execs were welcomed to the White House last year as a symbol of American industry. The president urged them to add jobs.
Made in America. Harley-Davidson. Made in America.
But earlier this year, the company said it would move much of its Kansas City plant operations to Thailand. Now, Harley says a 25% increase in European tariffs would add $2,200 to the cost of a motorcycle shipped to Europe, its second biggest market. Late today, President Trump tweeted, surprised that Harley-Davidson, of all companies, would be the first to wave the white flag. I fought hard for them, and ultimately, they will not pay tariffs selling into the EU. In the Wall Street slide today, Harley's stock lost 6%. Of course, it's not just Harley's affected by the tariffs and counter-tariffs. It's everything from cheese to nails to cranberries to, of all things, movie theater seats. At first-class seating in Michigan, Chuck Reed fears higher steel prices will force his prices higher, costing him valuable customers. But he's reluctant to move manufacturing overseas.
The price, when you're selling to a theater, is paramount. And if we don't keep that cost down, they will look for alternative resources.
Back in Harley's home state of Wisconsin, Governor Scott Walker today urged all sides to pull back.
Let's just get rid of all the tariffs out there.
As a threatened trade war now threatens classic American jobs. Tom Costello, NBC News, Frederick, Maryland.
Here in California, the governor declared a state of emergency today in northern Lake County after a fast-moving wildfire forced 3,000 people from their homes. The Pawnee Fire, as it's been named, has destroyed 22 structures and threatens hundreds more. And in northern Florida, a fast-moving wildfire destroyed about 30 homes in the Panhandle region and displaced around 200 people. Now to a murder mystery here in Southern California. Police say a 35-year-old father on a family camping trip was gunned down with his 2- and 4-year-old daughters by his side. It happened in a popular park made famous by TV and movies. But there was no known suspect or motive. NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer has the story.
When sheriff's deputies arrived at Malibu Creek State Park, the victim had been shot multiple times, gunned down as he camped with his children in the early morning hours. Investigators say someone opened fire on 35-year-old Tristan Baudette from outside his tent. His 2 and 4-year-old daughters by his side were not injured.
About 4:44 in the morning, the sheriff's received a 911 call and responded and found a male victim of a gunshot.
A chemist who attended UC Berkeley, friends say Baudette was camping with his girls so his wife, a doctor, could prepare for an exam. His family, who is moving to the Bay Area, says not a second goes by that we aren't grappling with the senselessness of this crime.
He was just a family man. And that's where he was geared for, just to take care of his family and be there for them.
Less than 30 miles outside Beverly Hills, Malibu Creek offers incredible views and is known for its Hollywood backdrop in shows like MASH.
But there has been recent trouble in the park. A body was found nearby, discovered 2 weeks ago, and investigators are looking into a string of shootings that, for now, are not connected.
Tonight, the iconic campground is closed. And with no suspect, the case of this murder mystery is wide open. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News, Malibu.
Funeral services were held today outside Pittsburgh for Antoine Rose, the 17-year-old at the center of a firestorm, after police were caught on camera fatally shooting him as he fled a traffic stop on foot last week. Rose was unarmed and a passenger in a car that police suspected was linked to a drive-by shooting. His death sparking days of protests. The officer has been placed on leave. Now to the fiery plane crash in Detroit. The family of three aboard and the lone survivor, a teenage boy, caught on camera rolling out of the flames and incredibly able to walk away. And tonight we hear from witnesses who jumped in to help save him. NBC's Ann Thompson has the story.
When you look at the intensity of the fire, it's amazing that anyone was able to do this. 17-year-old Peyton Bowes rolls out of the burning wreckage and incredibly walks away. The lone survivor of the single-engine plane crash on Detroit's east side Sunday night.
The pilot is stuck in the plane. Plane is on fire.
Tonight, police credit courageous Good Samaritans who reportedly used a baseball bat and an axe to try and free the injured. Cordell Owens says he was one of them.
They kept saying it was going to explode, but I couldn't leave. I couldn't leave that guy to burn up.
Peyton Bowes got out, but his father, Greg, who was at the controls, and stepmother, Julie, died in the crash. They were all on their way from Texas to a family event. Investigators on the scene today say the pilot reported landing gear trouble and a fuel emergency to the Detroit City Airport tower.
Control tower offered to fly by the tower. The pilot requested to circle to troubleshoot.
The Cessna clipped two trees and a power line, leading to this calamity and a remarkable escape. Ann Thompson, NBC News.
For years, we've been told about the need to recycle, and while no one will disagree with the importance of that goal, much of the trash that we all put out for recycling has been piling up in this country, all because of a big policy change half a world away. We get that story from business correspondent Jolene Kent.
Every week on Garbage Day, blue bins across America hit the curb.
Americans recycle about 66 million tons of stuff a year, but now all that effort may be going to waste.
That's because China has stopped accepting the majority of our recyclables. The United States used to send over 1,000 shipping containers full of recyclables to China each day. But that stopped January 1st after China launched an aggressive anti-pollution push, cracking down on what it calls foreign garbage.
It was a shock to the system.
The Chinese government now bans the imports of 24 types of scrap, including some paper and plastic. And it's a decision that's creating new problems here at home. Now recyclables are piling up with nowhere to go. The change upended recycling companies like Republic, one of the largest waste managers in the country.
When material like this, like all this paper, can't get recycled fast enough, it can end up going to a landfill instead.
Republic now sends about 2,000 tons of their recyclable paper to the dump every month. Steve Frank, president of Pioneer Recycling Services, used to export 60% of his recycling to China.
How much in total did you send to China last year?
100 to 120,000 tons.
And this year?
Zero.
Frank now ships plastic and paper to Southeast Asia and India, and it's costing him more.
Ultimately, when it's all done, the homeowner is going to pay for that.
Nationally, consumer recycling bills are expected to jump $2 to $4 a month. And experts caution even then, paper and plastic in the U.S. will continue to pile up. Jolene Kent, NBC News, Tacoma, Washington.
Still ahead as we continue tonight, bringing the hospital to your home. Doctors now say for some patients, it may be the best place to be treated. Also, a medical milestone. The FDA approves the first prescription drug derived from marijuana. We'll tell you what it's for. We're back with a new trend in medical care, bringing a hospital into your home. A new study out today shows patients treated at home have fewer hospital readmissions, fewer ER visits, and shorter length of care. NBC News medical correspondent Dr. John Torres has more.
When Maureen Reen went to a Boston emergency room struggling to breathe, doctors had an unusual way to treat her. They sent her home.
I was surprised at first that they told me I could go home. And then I smiled because I could go home.
It's called the home hospital.
So we essentially have the hospital in this pack here.
Dr. David Levine is a pioneer behind this new trend designed to give seriously ill patients better care.
We don't talk about how often people die in hospitals, how people get infections in hospitals. A lot of those things aren't going to happen in a home hospital. How are we feeling?
In her own living room, Maureen gets the same treatment she would in the hospital. Medication, an IV, and a doctor's exam.
Nice deep breaths.
Back at the hospital, a wireless skin patch keeps track of her vitals.
Right now, her heart's going at 90 beats a minute. She's breathing 20 times a minute.
Dr. Levine says patients in the home hospital get an extra 2 hours of sleep and 2 more hours of physical activity each day, which helps them recover faster. And for the hospital, costs are 52% less. One reason it's being studied in leading medical centers. Not every ER patient is a potential candidate.
If you have really, really complicated medical problems and you're destined for intensive care, right, the ICU, that's where right now we're drawing the line.
But for Maureen, there's no better place to get better.
No place like home.
Dr. John Torres, NBC News, Boston.
We're back in a moment with the terrifying moments as a hot air balloon crashes into a power line. Also, the moving tribute to a beloved teacher, her students carrying out one last wish. In a historic move, the FDA today approved the very first prescription drug made from marijuana. It's a medication used to treat rare forms of epilepsy that begin in childhood. The main ingredient is a chemical from the cannabis plant, which tests show can reduce seizures but does not get users high. It was a terrifying few minutes in Michigan during a hot air balloon festival this weekend. As one of the balloons descended, it hit a power line, causing an explosion and flames that burned part of the balloon before it rose again and eventually landed in a lake. Fortunately, no one was injured in the crash. And a moving tribute to a teacher in Georgia who died of cancer. Friends, family, and fellow teachers brought backpacks filled with school supplies to Tammy Waddell's funeral in Forsyth County. It was her last wish. Instead of bringing flowers to her funeral, she wanted her loved ones to donate the school supplies for needy students. As her cousin put it, she was serving others until the end. We'll take a break, and when we come back, inspiring America and the big victory by one Little League player who just wanted to see them all. Finally tonight, we have the story of the Little Leaguer who successfully made a big league pitch to level the playing field for kids like himself who can't see well. His passion for the sport and his determination to effect change are inspiring America.
Pike!
When Ryan Huestis is out playing baseball, he feels like a normal boy of summer.
Ever since I can remember, it's always been my favorite sport. I love it. One of the things I love about it is that I can play it almost as well as everybody else.
Even though he can't see as well as his teammates, the 16-year-old from Grosse Pointe Woods, Michigan, was born with albinism, but has never let that get in his way.
We made a decision a long time ago that we were never going to limit him in what he could try.
So you guys got to watch.
His dad and coach says they learned early on that he couldn't see the white ball very well, but using a yellow ball made all the difference.
He's making fielding plays he would have never made with a white ball. So he's really doing well.
But when Ryan's team made it to the district tournament 3 years ago, Little League Baseball insisted they play by the book and use the standard white ball.
was upset about it because it's not fair that they're going to prevent somebody from playing.
So Ryan decided to play hardball and took his case to the U.S. Department of Justice. This spring, when federal authorities told the Little League it was under investigation, the league agreed to allow the yellow ball for all visually impaired kids nationwide.
He could have said at any time, I don't want this anymore, I'm done with this, and he never did, so I'm pretty proud of him.
A sweet victory for Ryan and all the other kids for whom he went to bat.
Tomorrow, at the end of the broadcast, and our nightly snapshot, taking the comforts of home to new heights. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Monday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching, and good night.